This is Paul Rodell, again, the IVS Oral History Project. It is now September 7th. I'm in the living room of Daniel Drew here in Bissell Street on Chicago. Dan, is it preferred Dan?
Yes.
Okay. Dan was in Laos from 1969 through 1971. During the interesting time of pulling back people from forward areas and agricultural sites, and we'll get into some of the reasons why and how that impacted on you. But for a first question, after that brief introduction, the first thing we've been asking everybody is something about themselves in terms of their own personal background. So basically, I'd like to know when and where you were born, who your parents were, not just their names, but who they were as people and as participants in the community and in your life. And anything else that you would think were very formative in your attitudes and in your outlook on the world, especially with the mind of heading you toward an IVS kind of experience, whether it was IVS or Peace Corps or whatever. With that, I can shut up,
okay.
Drink the water, save my voice, and let you do the talking.
I was born in 1946 in downstate Illinois. When I was 2 years old, my parents moved to Chicago.
Where downstate?
I was born in Quincy. It was
I've heard of it.
Mount, which is right on the Mississippi River across from Hannibal. Missouri.
Oh, yeah, yeah, okay.
They lived at the time in Mount Sterling, Illinois, Brown County, which is the between the Illinois and Mississippi rivers.
Mm-hmm.
Small farming community. Both my parents came from a rural background. They moved up here in, as I said, about 48, 49. My father went into construction as a result of having other relatives and people from that area who moved to Chicago.
Oh.
Okay. Got into construction.
Kind of plugged into a network.
Exactly.
Yeah.
When I was 10 years old, we moved out to Palatine. We lived on a 50-acre farm in Palatine. And
I don't know if there's any 50-acre farms left in Palatine these days.
Not the housing development.
Yeah.
Sure. And there's 20 times as many people as when I was growing up there.
Similar to my Grays Lake.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. My father was usually very busy in construction, so I ended up doing most of the farming. My mother and I.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Ended up taking care. And it was a. We had everything. Cows. I was always milking cows. We planted corn and beans. And cultivated those, chickens, pigs, etc.
And probably learned all those wonderful skills that me as a suburban kid never learned.
Absolutely. And then worked summers with my father in construction and also picked up a lot of skills.
Oh, yeah.
Doing things I had no idea that I was learning things.
Right.
Remember later in school discovering that mnemonics that they were using to square up a foundation or square up a building pad were the things that had been done by the ancient Egyptians with the, you know, with the cords and the measurements. I don't know that my parents, neither of my parents went to college. I don't know if they had any particular interest in developed in me a particular interest in international, just geography per se. I can remember, I remember very little, my memory is terrible, but one of the dramatic memories from childhood, one of the things that focused me on an overseas career. at least when I was in college, that was what I took as a major. I went to Michigan State and took a major in effectively was allowed to construct a major. It was economic development, cultural change.
Really?
Cool, yes. And
wow.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah.
It was an honors program. And,
uh-huh.
And so with an advisor, I was allowed to construct a curriculum,
mm-hmm.
effectively economics as the major, and then the question of economic development and cultural change, why some societies develop and others don't. All those.
Or in different directions or all sorts of things.
Always fascinating. So,
yeah.
But the early on, one of the dramatic memories I had was reading Tom Dooley's books.
Yep. Like They Burned the Mountain and all those
that,
all those others.
At the time I was raised in a very religious Catholic home.
Uh-huh.
So there's that whole focus.
And Tom Dooley spoke to that with all the refugee stuff.
Oh yeah. So that was, I think, the in my youth, that was a direction that I developed.
Yeah.
And then I got to Michigan State, which coincidentally then had, at that time in 67, it was the summer between my junior and senior year,
mm-hmm.
USAID had that internship program for their own people, and they expanded it to include IBS. So they...
Yeah, tell me about the internship program, because as I mentioned before,
you characterize it best as something more than a tourist experience, but dramatically less than a volunteer experience. So you get a little bit of language,
uh-huh.
and then they stuck you out in a village
uh-huh.
with another IBS volunteer. So effectively, you were just kind of tagging along.
Yeah.
There was no...
You had no responsibility.
No, I mean, it was too short a time period. It was a three-month period. It was too short a time period to actually get acclimated. You certainly didn't have any language skills.
You probably had diarrhea. That was some
acclimation. I lost about 20 pounds.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah.
Great weight reduction program. Yeah. A little dysentery does wonders for you. So it was a nice summer vacation, but it wasn't particularly long.
But they had this through IBS then. So you applied.
Yes.
So did you apply to... See, I was wondering about, what's this? Oh, just something that was in the couch.
Yeah.
Just cleaning your couch.
Yeah, careful, just to be
careful. Can I have this rubber band? Well, I was wondering how you found out about this internship program, if you might remember that. And who
I
you
don't. I remember that Michigan State at the time had a very large involvement in Vietnam. Michigan State.
Oh, that's right. The police programs
and
the economic development, the bureaucracy and FISL and all that stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
They had a huge, I think they were probably the single biggest
mm-hmm.
university component of the USAID effort in Vietnam at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, the Department of Public Safety was training
the police and et cetera.
And in a tremendous, legitimate, because it was an ag school, so they had a huge non-political agricultural development program.
Non-overtly political, at least.
Oh, no, I mean, well, that was one of the things that one of the later, when I was in Laos, and we were the front lines of the USAID effort, we were naive, and volunteers were naive, and our perception of our function and how the rest of the rest of all the players on both sides conceived of us. Say we were young, naive kids. We didn't have a clue as to what was going on.
Sort of vague awareness that.
Well, because most of the volunteers, this was when I was there. It was the height of the resistance to the Vietnam War.
When you were, in Laos or in Laos. Michigan State?
Michigan State was just starting. Michigan State, okay. I can remember arguing at the time with the number of the less aware students as to the propriety of our involvement in Vietnam. I mean, early on it came to the conclusion that we didn't have a clue as to the appropriate engagement in Vietnam. We were on the wrong side from shortly after Ho Chi Minh kicked out the French.
Yeah.
In any event, I don't remember precisely how I got to Vietnam, but that was I enjoyed that experience.
Yeah, I was just thinking that it probably came because of this specific economic development option,
well,
so
aid,
that they were, you know,
sure, aid had
targeting
a huge,
that school, probably.
Exactly, aid had a huge program. Michigan State was a large part of that program.
Correct.
And as the bureaucracy was spending money, here's a funnel.
Yeah. Here's a funnel, and also here are some students
who
would be ideal.
Oh yeah,
they're being trained for it. Give them some practical field experience for a summer. Get them hooked psychologically.
Right.
Back to class, and they'll be,
right.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I was in Tay Ninh.
It's actually brilliant when you think about it.
Yeah, sure. I mean, it's a good. Again, it was not of any benefit for the country, but long term, it did introduce people. It was a good recruiting tool.
And it also recruited you at a village level.
Yeah.
It didn't recruit you just simply into a capital city where you hung out at a bar and drank margaritas or something.
Yeah, true.
So, yeah.
And so we ended up, I ended up in Tay Ninh.
Uh-huh.
So I remember there was about 20 of us went over that summer
to
Vietnam. I ended up in Tay Ninh, and, which is just above the Parrots Peak there. An amusing little sect, the Cao Dai.
You were in the Cao Dai area,
Their cathedral area, great. You know, their saints are Sun Yat-sen, Victor Hugo, and Lao Tse are their saints over there. And they're vegetarians, they produce foods which look like meat, but they all taste the same, just like a bad soybean. So I came back.
Do you remember the volunteer you were with?
It seems like it was Russell Means.
Russell Means?
I believe so.
Okay.
Is that possible?
I don't know. I'd have to look up the name.
I'd have to look at the names because.
Yeah.
Like I say, my memory is terrible.
Okay. Well, you know, I'll
Means or Myers. It was Russ. Russ.
I'll look it through the M's, but it was Russell first name.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, first try, let me put this on pause while I
look
it up. Time to put this back on again. And I was actually kind of holding you back from going on by covering some of the people that you worked with in this internship, and probably didn't go into some things that you may have wanted, so I'm sorry to interrupt like I did.
No, the internship never left much of a, it was my first overseas experience.
Mm-hmm.
So, and it was, again, it's so brief in country that it just, and it was in a war situation, so you had that military element there.
What summer would this have been? Summer
67.
Of 67, okay. So you could at least go back to campus and say, I know this, that, and the other thing about what's going on.
Yeah.
Did you do that?
I'm sure I did. I'm sure I had, I'm sure I used that. Use that instant expertise, sure.
Well, to some extent, it would have been more than many of the fellow students would have had.
Right. I think, though, that most of the arguments that I used were as a result of reading historical ramparts.
Oh, yeah.
That was very well done, and that had some excellent histories and actual political arguments
mm-hmm.
as to why the U.S. was screwed up.
Yeah, it was quite defining.
The domino theory and all the rest of it.
Mm-hmm.
Then I spent another year in school. I took off the spring quarter to campaign for McCarthy.
Mm-hmm.
Went to started in Michigan, went to Indiana, and ended up in California.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, you really joined the campaign.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Dropped out.
Yeah.
I just took incompletes and honor courses, and
uh-huh.
and finished the subsequent summer.
You got clean for Gene.
I did, absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
See, I had already just graduated from Northern Illinois, mm-hmm. and it was before I went into Peace Corps, so I worked out of the Kenosha office for the Wisconsin campaign, you know?
Sure. And
which really upset my Republican parents.
Yeah, that was, my parents weren't so political, although that summer, 68, my father had people down at downtown during the convention,
mm-hmm.
and he was tear gassed.
Oh, he was.
Yeah, he was at the extreme. He was close to what was going on, but I mean, it was just had some people down. They were, I don't know where they were, but at the Hilton or whatever. I was one of those people who, after California.
Mm-hmm.
Just gave up.
Yeah.
I became too depressed to do anything. Also, at that time, I had was going through the whole draft resistance movement.
Mm-hmm.
I had made up my mind to go to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
I was not going to be drafted, nor was I going to go to jail. So
mm-hmm.
I was ready to go to Canada. This had been happening that summer. I had applied for conscientious objector status, expecting to be turned down because
yeah.
the rules clearly state you can't object to one more, as
yeah.
I was at that time. And
you can't pick and choose your...
No. That's,
yeah. I can't put you in the Wayback Machine to get you into Second World War.
Yeah,
you know
that was
I mean?
A good war. I would have gone to that one. The draft board
mm-hmm.
was, again, Northwest Suburban.
I know
board.
The types, yes.
And I had assumed that, geez, these five old men you know, had the flag embroidered on their underwear, and I gave them all the story, and I told them about my experience in Vietnam that previous summer, and I said, I understand the law, but here it is. And they said, well, we reviewed your file, and we think you're sincere, and the next thing he's going to say.
But.
And so this old guy with a, you know, just a real craggy old, narrow New England Puritan face. That,
you could almost see the American Legion cap.
Yeah, right. So he said, and we think you're sincere, so we're granting you your 1-0 status.
You are.
And I said, he said, do you have any questions? I said,
yeah, where's my voice?
And so I said, well, can I serve in IVS?
Mm-hmm.
He said, yeah, sure, that's fine. So then I applied to IVS, and they accepted me. And that was about a 90-day period. And in that time, I got a letter from Springfield that the head of the State Selective Service was appealing the local board's decision.
They wanted to reverse you.
They did. The head of
the
they were according to law. They were right. So
God.
I guess, you know, I guess by that time, it was interesting to me that by that time, this local board, which was undoubtedly staunch right-wing Republicans,
You might want to repeat the characterization of the local board.
The local board, I assume, were staunch right-wing Republicans, were at that time making these decisions because, by that time, late 68, they had come to the conclusion that, that there were problems with this war and with what it was doing, the people they were responsible for sending over.
Even out in not just Peoria, but Palatine, too.
Yeah. The board was actually in Des Plaines. It was...
The northwest suburbs.
Playing in Peoria. So the lieutenant colonel down in Springfield appealed the decision. Of course, it was then reversed, and I was put back to a 1A status. But by that time, I was in IBS, which was also a deferment.
They gave you a 2A for that, then.
Yes.
Okay.
And so I had assumed I was going back to Vietnam, but for whatever reason, that program was full, so they sent me to Laos.
When about in 68 would this have been?
It was late 68 that it was fall of 68 that I would have been going through this process.
All right.
Because it was then late fall when I was accepted to IBS, and I ended up in training and then in Laos by, I believe it was February of 69.
Okay, because I was wondering, because you had on the form 69-71.
Right.
So you're talking 68 now. I was figured it had to be late.
Right.
And you had requested Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, they drastically reduced that program after the Tet Offensive.
Right.
So they probably didn't want to build it back up too quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was, okay, all right. That makes sense. Yeah, that all works out. I mean, it should.
Yeah.
I mean, because it did, but I just had to get it straight for myself.
So that's how I got to Laos. I can remember at the time thinking, well, okay. All right, fine.
Because you'd been in Vietnam, did you also know something about Laos in terms of what you might expect there?
Nothing.
No idea. Okay.
No idea. Then when I got to Laos, I found that I enjoyed the Lao more than Vietnamese. I thought it was more interesting there than it was for me in Vietnam. Vietnam had too much of a military camp.
Yeah.
We spent some 6 weeks training, and then I was placed out.
Could you tell me a little bit about the training?
It was.
And any orientation stuff as you got.
I don't remember much. Just the standard orientation stuff.
Okay.
That. I remember being in Phong Bien, Laos, for our training, which was a small town.
Phong Bien is not very large. Yeah.
A couple hours, hour or so north of Vientiane, and we had some training in Washington, and then we went to, did something in the Philippines. I can vaguely remember a week or so in the Philippines. I can't remember where that was. That must have been the Lao trip. It wouldn't have been the previous summer with the...
That was probably direct. I mean, in the summer before, you probably went directly to Vietnam.
Probably, yeah. Because just wouldn't have been time. But.
Yeah. No, a lot of Aggies went to the Philippines to the agriculture college, things like that.
Yeah. Erie, I remember that. Mm-hmm. The rice fries and so on. So, Phong Bien, we had language training, and that was about it. There was nothing else to do there, so.
So you might as well study language training.
Yeah, we had one very old guy with us. He must have been in his 60s at the time.
As a volunteer?
Yes.
Can you remember his name?
No, I don't, because he didn't last. Hi, Kate. This is my oldest.
Oh, okay.
Coming back from an overnight.
An overnight backpack. It's hopefully not too bad.
Paul is interviewing me on my doing an oral history on IBS.
Hi.
He didn't last. That was, I remember at the time I was less than tolerant of his inability to hear language. He was holding back the rest of the group for language things.
Oh, yeah.
He was physically very able, although he walked a lot. Was just constantly sweating. And after...
Probably everybody was.
Yeah, even more than most. And after after we completed the language training, got back to St. John and prior to being assigned, dropped out. And went home.
The reason I asked you about that, and I'll just pause for briefly, it's just this listing here, and okay, I put it back on again. Okay, so we got you going through language training, and
then I was sent out to a village just about 40 miles north of Spanaketa, about 10 miles from Mekong. Was on that main route, and I was the only round eye for about 40 miles.
That's almost a quote from your survey one here.
Yeah, and that was to me a surprise. Not a surprise, but it was something I remember thinking at the time that we were, or perhaps I came to this realization afterwards when it became more cynical about our involvement with the USA presence and use of volunteers.
Mm-hmm.
But I can remember driving that isolated highway in the Jeep they gave me and the radio equipment they gave me and so on. Thinking that this was a little beyond what I had expected in terms of my efforts. I didn't think that I would be so be that front line, be equipped to be the front line and the engineers and so on. I was only out there about 4 months. I was living with a minor government official that had me live with him and his family.
So you actually did get to live with a Lao family.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That's good.
It was, and that part of the experience was very good. The fact that I had a background in construction and in farming would have allowed me to be very effective in the environment I was in, which was essentially Laos at that time was a 16th century technology.
Yeah.
That would have been very effective.
Yeah.
Unfortunately.
And then you had the working relationship and the familial relationship on your side to integrate yourself. Mm-hmm. Know who to talk to and have an introduction to talk to anybody. Oh, that's... Sounds perfect. I mean, I could have used you in my place. You know, because I was also like 40, not miles, but 40 kilometers from a road, and you know, had to do the rice and the vegetables and rabbit raising and you know, stuff like that. It's tough.
Yeah.
Did you work on anything while you were there?
Started some projects. I don't remember them now. The major problem though was at that time was that the war started spilling over. That was when they started bombing the Ho Chi Minh Trail real heavily. So the NVA and that Lao had to move
right
west towards the Mekong.
Now, isn't it always strange how they would bomb one place, so of course they just move over and then, you know, and then go into areas that were perfectly secure before?
Right. Yeah, I've said to anyone who will listen that I always thought that Henry Kissinger will inhabit the lowest levels of hell for his, what he did to Cambodia.
Mm-hmm.
That was the actions of a fanatic. They were failing, so they started to take out their frustration on Sihanouk, who was doing a marvelous job maintaining order there.
Straddling sides.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he was a genius at what he was doing, but it wasn't. It just pissed off the guys.
Yeah.
So you print that. Henry Kissinger should not be now being honored and revered as a tremendous political guy.
No.
Mutt. Anyhow, a week after I was first out with the family, a large force came through down the they didn't know I was there, and so they passed through, we went to the river.
Uh-huh. And that's when you were just there, fairly new,
just
1 week.
Just a week.
Yeah.
Shortly thereafter, the family, and I was evacuated, came back, and shortly thereafter, the family asked me if I could get a gun.
They wanted a gun?
Wanted me to have a gun.
They wanted you to have a gun, okay.
And that was really contrary to my image of myself and my purpose in being there, and so on. So I spent about 3 months there.
Did you get a gun?
No.
No, I didn't think so. But I just, you know, you didn't
no.
exactly
I would,
say.
I would, you know, the thought was always there that if they were to come, what would I do? Try to jump out. The houses were on stilts, but I couldn't jump out and run away in the jungle or fall on the roof.
Go on the roof?
What are you going to do?
Yeah, okay.
So.
Yeah, one white guy with a gun versus 160
trained soldiers.
Trained soldiers, each with guns. Who's going to win? Where's the smart money on this one?
Yeah. Right. So again, I was doing work, was going around in the various rural areas looking for, mm-hmm. I think at the time the major focus was rice,
mm-hmm.
new varieties and fertilizer and so forth. I can remember getting off in these trails and being in the, I got out there like, probably in April, May, so it was just the beginning of the rainy season.
Okay, yeah.
So you would have, the Jeep had a winch on it, and mm-hmm. frequently ended up using the winch to get to the muggles. It was a great experience physically, and of course it was interesting to get out and see the really rural areas where,
mm-hmm.
to the kids, I was an oddity. I was always attracted. Proud. But as I say, at that point, the war started heating up, and the IVS people in Laos became targets. The people, the IVSers were the only ones who were actually living out on the front lines, living actually in the vulnerable areas.
Yeah, because AID would not, that one's loud. That must be an express. It's probably from Evanston or something like that. Because AID would have all their people in pretty secure areas.
Oh yeah, they would always be in the provincial capitals.
Yeah.
In towns, they were never out there.
Yeah. Any missionary priests where you were, Catholic or
not
otherwise?
Not there. Uh-huh. Not where I was. No. No.
So when you said that you were the only Round Eye, you really meant that in an absolute sense.
Absolutely.
Not just an official or quasi-official sense.
The next person up was town of Takek, which was probably, again, my geography, maybe kilometers, not miles, but in any way, the next town was like 2 or 3 hours north, and there was a volunteer station somewhere around there.
Oh, yeah.
But who actually, I believe, was killed. It was one of the people who was killed. Mm. So after I'd been there about 3 or 4 months, was when there was coordinated, apparently coordinated attack on IVS volunteers, and I believe 4 people were killed in the space of a few weeks.
I think that's a little high, but anyway.
Three or four, but it happened like in a very short period of time.
Yeah.
And I knew one of them. He was the assistant head of the IVS mission.
Stillman?
Stillman, yeah.
Yeah.
I believe he had a Thai wife.
The numbers go like he and another volunteer, Dennis Mumford, were in a Jeep together.
Right.
And it was a rocket attack. And then the number comes because they had 2 Laotian kind of IVS assistants with them.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. But I thought there was another separate incident.
There were a couple earlier, just a little bit earlier. Yeah.
But didn't someone also die in that earlier incident?
Oh, yes.
And who was that?
Well, some of the earlier people, who was killed in 67, a man named Scheidler, and that's a well-known story, if not the name, because not everyone remembers the name, but he was killed while sleeping.
No, see, I don't remember that story at all.
Okay, he was, I forget the location, but in a very forward area also, and that came underneath the house and then just shot up at night. And then there was another fellow, Chandler Edwards.
Yes.
Who was also killed later, and I can't remember exactly when for him. So you probably think of him along with Stillman within that context of your early experience.
Stillman and Edwards, I knew. So Edwards happened. It may have been that Edwards happened right after Stillman.
I think, well, anyway, yeah.
Whatever, whether it was before or after. That was when the head of security came out in a helicopter and landed. Of course, that was a big metaphor. Dust blowing everywhere.
Yeah, this big machine.
Yeah.
More Round Eyes come out.
Yeah, and he got out, and this colonel with a brush crew cut said, "Son, where's your security here?" He said, "Well, I think there's a few guys down a couple miles away at the bridge, you know, Regular Army at the bridge," and he said, "That's it, you're leaving right now." So he said, "It's the worst goddamn security I've ever seen." So apparently he must have been, probably was embassy security, muttering about the USA that they were.
He was probably very new and just getting his feet on the ground and probably shocked to see what was going on.
Yeah. Well, after these incidents.
Especially after the incidents. But I can imagine somebody new coming and saying, "What the hell is this AID doing?"
Actually, you know, that's when I first learned that there had been the other assassination. So he told me.
He told you what was going on. Yeah.
Because he didn't even leave me to pack anything. Just come on, we're going right now. Got on the helicopter and right back to.
Could he even pack a gripper in it?
No. It was like. Yeah, I mean, I might have 5 minutes to, but I left a lot of stuff, and they sent people back for it. And then subsequently, I heard that about a week later, the PL did come into the village asking for me by name,
mm-hmm.
or asking for the big-nosed foreigner that lived there.
They certainly knew that
they
you
knew
were
I was there.
There. And they were after you at that time.
They were looking for me.
Uh-huh. And not because of the welcome wagon.
No, it was, as I say, it was part of that.
They didn't have the basket of fruit and flowers.
It was part of that. the we in IBS distinguished ourselves in our own minds from the rest of the American war effort, but we were the only ones doing it.
You were the only ones what?
Making that distinction between the good Americans and the bad Americans. War effort. Nobody else was doing that. USA and the other side, all of them knew that we were a part of that, showing the flag and winning the hearts and minds. And
everyone else knew that.
It was only us dumb kids that were making that, you know, righteous, pure effort that we thought would be appreciated, but in fact, as I say, it was extremely naive.
Mm-hmm.
And so I ended up back in Vientiane. There were positions for that were created for the volunteers. Mine was to be an advisor to the training program for the Agricultural Development Agents.
This seems a little strange to me. You were going to be for the Laotian agriculture extension.
Right.
Extension agents.
Exactly.
Okay.
Right.
All right. Because I was thinking they withdrew you. Who else would they put
right.
in?
Right. No. I had minimal language capability at that time.
Uh huh.
There were Lao teachers in the program who were far away as confident as I was to essentially impart a little bit of knowledge to these guys. I mean, you know,
yeah.
It was pretty basic. Here's how to figure out how much fertilizer to put on a plot of rice. It's about
mm-hmm.
what it was. It was a make-work position. It had nothing to do with anything. So I ended up showing up an hour or two a day and just basically living in China. I made one brief attempt to find some meaningful work.
Uh-huh.
I did, in fact, find a position where I had some brief statistical background in college.
Mm-hmm.
And found a position that would have allowed me to apply that and actually have something to teach, something useful to do, but because that slot was not in the program, my choice, according to my immediate supervisor, I don't remember who it was, told me this. I'm going to wait for that.
Yeah. Maybe just a little. Anyway, back on again. So
I found this position which would have effectively been teaching statistics, and it would have been in the, I believe, in the Department of Agriculture, or perhaps it wasn't agriculture, but it was some really legitimate, viable position. And they said, no, this is your position. So at that point.
And this is IBS saying this?
Yeah, it was IBS.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. They didn't want to go to AID and say, look, and partly because they had a couple of other people in that same program. So they couldn't go to AID and say, look, these are three bogus slots here. So why don't we? So the choice was either stay in what I was supposedly doing or go back home, terminate early.
which you didn't want.
No intention of doing that.
Yeah.
So I, as I say, spent about a year and a half in Laos in doing essentially nothing.
What, yeah, this sort of bringing something up. Why didn't you want to go back? You said you had no intention of going back.
Because
what kept you there?
The draft.
Okay. So you wanted to do the 2A or
yeah,
CO
I had no intention
thing.
Of
yeah.
going into the Army, so going to Canada was unpleasant alternative. It was the only thing I would have done.
Okay,
And I enjoyed living in Laos. It was fun living there. I mean, I was making $80 a month plus my living expenses. I was making as much as a deputy minister in the Laotian government.
Okay.
It was, I was living like a king. It was great.
Yeah.
It was
yeah.
great. Also then at one point, I figured out some make work project was that after we had been running these guys through the system,
uh-huh.
Again, my Lao counterpart was doing most of the work, so all I had to do was kind of watch. I couldn't develop my language skills, though, because I was living, again, in the urban area and having very little need to... I got to taxi cab level, wow. I could bargain in the market, but basically I didn't learn the language that way.
Were you staying with other volunteers?
No, I had... one of the things I did right was to get my own apartment downtown,
uh-huh.
away from the complex.
The kilometer six.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I did that. That was good. But again, it was, remember the people around me, one of them was a Japanese volunteer. JVM.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I think that's the initials.
Yeah.
But.
JOCV.
Yeah, that could be.
Because there was one in my assignment. Kind of amusing story that I'll just mention briefly off tape because it's not part
sure.
of this. Put that back on. You did live in town, your own place. You knew the Japanese volunteers.
And again, we could only communicate in Lao, so we didn't have much to say to each other. So,
well, you had a lot to say, but...
Yeah, right. And so I read a lot, and just lived. It was great.
Uh-huh.
Although I did say, at some point, I came up with the brilliant idea of follow-up training in field for the guys that had run through the program. It was like a 3-week, 4-week program.
Mm-hmm.
These extension agents. So I came up with a brilliant idea of going out to the field to do reviews. And it was so good that the other IBS volunteer, who was also in this meaningless position, when I went south, I found out when I got back that he had already gone north. So he had stolen a field trip.
Oh, so you wanted to do all the field trips.
Yeah, just to get the hell out and do something, you know.
Yeah,
Just get out and travel around.
Well,
so
he was probably just as
antsy. He was. It was a real validation when...
Yeah, but you understood why he wanted to do it.
Oh, sure.
Do you remember who that was?
I knew you were going to ask that question, and the thought was coming through my mind, and I'm not sure the name Fred Cunningham.
Yep.
I was going to ask you about
Fred Cunningham is a name that many people mention. And he is living, I think, in Scotland.
Scotland, for God's sake.
If my memory serves me right, I'll pause while I look it up. All right, so got it back off pause again.
But in any event, I got to travel around a lot with that. On the milk runs, you fly down.
With the Air America flights? Yeah, okay.
So I got to some interesting spots and got up on the Bolivans Plateau. That was a spectacular event. And that was about it. I just spent, let's say, a year and a half really doing nothing but living there.
Yeah. So. Hanging out, waiting for the 2 years to pass for the CO status, occasionally coming up with some good projects, like the follow-up.
Yeah, but it wasn't that good. I mean, it wasn't. Yeah.
Oh, you mean it was brilliant as far as getting out of town?
Yeah, exactly.
It wasn't necessarily it good.
Yeah, what the hell? the amount of knowledge I had to impart was maybe 10 minutes. Could have done 10 minutes. And they built a year and a half around it. For me and another guy. It was. The only net benefit was that I put a few more dollars in the wild economy.
Yeah, yeah, and maybe your own bank account for the trip home.
Yeah, yeah. That's it. I mean, I just, and then I did spend about 6 months coming home, because by that time they had instituted the lottery system.
Oh yes, sure, sure.
In terms of who's going to get drafted, and by 71, my number was about 30 slots above the final. I had number 160.
And they were going to go down to what?
Went up to 130. From one.
That's what you meant. Okay. So you were perfectly safe.
Yes. They didn't know for sure, but it was.
Yeah. I don't think they had even gone anywhere near the 130. Yeah.
So that was my overseas experience. And
well, if I could, now I might chirp in with some additional questions, just
sure.
To see a couple of things. When they, I know how you felt about the gun, the offer of the gun, like it's ridiculous. Did you have any qualms or queasiness about the radio?
Sure, that was. There was no purpose in terms of agricultural development for me to have a radio.
Right, right.
The Jeep obviously was.
Well, yeah, the Jeep.
A benefit to me and to the government agent I was living with to have.
Yeah, I could see the Jeep. I mean, I wish I had something like that when I was in Peace Corps, you know.
Because I was in a very rural area. Once
yeah.
you got off the main track.
I know.
You were. You couldn't get
stuck.
Very far, yeah. And again, without a winch on this Jeep, in the rainy season, you couldn't get very far.
Right. But the radio's different.
The radio was, that was the first inkling I had that this was not a Peace Corps experience, not a pure, noble, Tom Dooley kind of experience.
Mm-hmm.
But again, I was naive, and I thought because I had, as did the rest of the volunteers, we so distinguished ourselves from the whole military complex there, the
mm-hmm.
political mm-hmm. military
yeah.
complex, that other people would make those distinctions also.
Did it strike you as that your own nightly reports or twice daily reports over the radio could somehow be interpreted as military significance? Even
I never had to make daily reports.
Oh, you didn't? Oh, okay.
I don't remember that, no.
Okay, because some people clearly remember how they had to, maybe twice a day, maybe once a day, whatever. But if they didn't call in, there would immediately be a helicopter checking up on them.
No, no.
Okay, so
no,
you weren't in that kind
never.
Of position.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
No.
All right.
No, I hadn't heard that. No.
Yeah.
No, I mean, I had the radio and was expected, again, to use it.
Well, this was an emergency.
Emergency situations, but I did have, you know, I don't remember the precise context, but I was expected, I think, to have some kind of regular communication, but it was not on a daily basis, nor was there anything helicopters coming unless I requested.
Yeah, yeah, okay. Well, no, some people were told very, you know, emphatically that they had to call in. And that they would be checked up on if no message came after a certain period of time. You know, and it was specifically said for security purposes. You know, but they were worried about him out there, and I would say, didn't that make you wonder?
Yeah. They want to know when you got killed?
Yeah, yeah, between which call. You know, like, come on. Something's very wrong with this picture.
Yeah, particularly since it was was such a cumbersome system because it took a couple of minutes to get the generator wind up and going, and then another couple of minutes to get the radio tube warmed up. And
it was an old tube thing, yeah.
Yeah, it had to be. Because
sure, yeah, that's right. Of course it had to be. Yeah. What about, I mean, everyone had to write monthly reports. You don't remember them?
No, I was probably not good at that either.
Okay.
I do remember having to write the, out of country.
Oh, the end of the whole thing?
The
yeah.
Of course, I don't remember what was in that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure I did monthly reports.
Okay.
Was there radically at best?
Yeah, I don't know how.
Yeah.
How I would have felt about that, or how prompt I would have been
sure.
Either.
So many villages visited, so many farmers talked to.
Yeah. Okay. Because, I was also wondering if there was any thought about, the monthly report of where I can go and what I've been able to do and work might also have significance for military stuff. Because IVS reports did get seen by AID supervisors.
Yeah, right.
You know, who could then report to certain people that, well, this area is secure because after all, the volunteer last month was able to go to blah, 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 and, see folks. So, even if by process of elimination, this area is secure, therefore,
sure.
You know. Switching to Vientiane, which I've learned how to pronounce properly. I made the mistake of saying Vientiane in front of, I don't know if you knew Carol Compton?
No.
Okay. Carol and her husband, Lynn, had been Peace Corps in Thailand and then were IVS in Laos. And Lynn is now, Lynn is at Madison in some, I'm not sure exactly what it is, but it's kind of community development, economic sort of thing. Whereas Carol, who is a linguist, teaches Lao. So I said Vientiane.
Yeah.
And it was like, right. Fingernails on the blackboard, and she was, Vientiane, Vientiane.
Right.
So I've been damn careful since. But switching back to Vientiane, one thing that you said pretty emphatically as being a good thing that you did was to get your own apartment to be away from the American community.
Right.
Was that a conscious decision, or are you okay? So it's not a reflection later,
no.
Now, 25 years. It's
at the time
you were...
Right, I could have went out at K-6, which I guess was where the school was.
K-9 was the school,
K-9
but
school,
six was the community.
Well...
Or the American compound. And,
right,
yeah.
The suburb.
The
suburb, yeah.
Yeah.
No, I had no intention of living there. And there was, it was taken as... Yeah, one of those peculiar volunteer things. By the 8 people that I would do that.
That you would get a place in the capital. Mm-hmm.
An apartment. It was an apartment building. It had a third floor walk up.
Mm-hmm.
The landlady had the hall lights were on a timer. You'd come in and turn them on, and then you had 30 seconds to get upstairs.
Uh-huh.
It would go black. So.
Carry
very
a flashlight.
Very economical.
It's a good idea. I hope you don't tell my landlady.
Yeah.
But okay, so obviously you wanted to stay away from the American community. Did you go out to the American compound for like the swimming pool, the hamburgers and things like that, or did you also shy away from that too?
On occasion.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Never the swimming pool. I did occasionally go out to, and I don't remember going out. I think that was in the city.
Okay. Yes. Yes.
There was, and that was the embassy and so on.
Yeah. Yes, I think I was probably speaking metaphorically, rather than specifically and geographically. So, so there was some distance between yourself and those amenities.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I live more like one of the old French colonies, I suppose.
Okay.
One of those old colonial holdovers.
Did you have a white linen suit?
No. But I remember I took my evening meal at a restaurant, which was run by a Vietnamese guy.
Uh-huh.
And, part of the French colonial mix, who had opened up a restaurant, did French cooking.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Well, I was wondering if there was, and you did answer that. Obviously, you're distancing yourself again from the American community, or at least holding yourself off from indulging in that, so as to live actually in and interact with the country where you're assigned. So to go on from there, did you have any frequent contact with some of the IVS people who were teaching out at the Kilometer 9 at the Don Dock School or any of the other places?
That would be the most frequent contacts I had with Americans were always typically IVS.
Okay.
Or ex-IVSers who may have been segwayed into the next step there. I started making some big bucks before I went back.
Yeah, sort of graduated as an IVS alumni, right. Could go into the big league of AID or something like that.
That's right.
Yeah.
Right. Yes, yeah, so, sure, that was.
Mm-hmm.
Again, I'm trying to remember the degree of involvement, but it wasn't.
Was not intense?
No. I mean, it was. They were the people I socialized with.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, the no-law. Other than ones who work for IBS,